it's already the middle of June 2017. Can you believe it? Just a few weeks, it'll be time to celebrate over the Memorial Day. That was a great weekend. It was especially for me because it was my 41st anniversary. We went away for that weekend and had a great time down at Amelia Island. First time been there, so it was busy, but it was fun to, always fun to get away for a couple of days. But it's hard to believe. Time flies, doesn't it? Whether you're having fun or not, it seems to fly. Time seems to fly by. Happy Father's Day for those of you out there listening that will be will celebrate your Father's Day tomorrow. So that's a good day for you. It will be a little warm and muggy like it is today, but hey, it's still a great day to celebrate with your children who made you the father and your spouse who helped make that happen as well. So I just hope you enjoy that day tomorrow. But this is Talking Money. This is Certified Financial Planner Mike Miller, your host for today. And just rest easy. We are not selling anything. Those of you who may be just tuning in, happen to flip the dial and say, what is this about Talking Money? We are not a sales organization. Plan First sponsors Talking Money, but we don't sell any products. So unlike the vast majority of financial, and I'll put quotes around that, financial shows out there who are trying to sell insurance, and just like that ad that came on just a couple minutes, that national ad that came on a couple minutes before I came on, you know, don't buy an annuity until you call me. Well, they're selling annuities, so it's interesting. They're trying to make it sound like, oh, we're going to warn you about annuities, when actually they're just trying to sell you theirs. So watch out, Josh Melberg. He's pretty good, and he's pretty slick, so watch out for those kinds of things. I had a couple of questions. Had an email question, and this also reminded me to remind you. Last week during the program, about 10:45, got an email at Ask Mike a Question. So when you go into planfirst.com, P-L-A-N-F-I-R-S-T, planfirst.com, you click on the microphone in the front home page, and that'll take you to the Talking Money section. And there's a line you can click there that says Ask Mike a Question. So Paul did that during the show last week. But I don't, just a reminder, I don't get those questions during the show. I do pick them up later, so we'll answer that Paul's question in just a minute. But just to remind you, the number to get to me today, 877-235-9405. That's a toll-free number, phone call or text. So you can text a question, 877-235-9405. So that, and that's one way to get a question. You can always just go to Talking Money, send an email to talkingmoney@planfirst.com. And of course, you can always go to info@planfirst.com. I get all those questions that come in that we can answer, either reply to it or I'll answer it on the radio, which is what I try to do most of the time. So Paul had a question. He says, can you give a quick explanation on advertisement in Sunday paper promising a high return on 6-month money market and CD? And I didn't see the ad he was talking about, but I've seen ads similar to that. And typically it's not a money market, but sometimes they have some of those in there and or a CD. Keep in mind, first thing, the number that they give you is the annualized number. So it may say annualized CD rate of 2.5% or 2.85% or whatever. That's if you were to keep that for 1 year. It's only a 6-month CD, so you get approximately half of that. Still decent. If you got another one in 6 months and you put it, rolled into that one, then you'd make that for a year, but it's a 6-month. But typically the ones that you see that are advertising these are there again, selling something. There's an agenda. Even though they'll say that CD is insured, and it is, they're working with a bank that's more or less a loss leader. So they're going to get you in the door and then try to show you an annuity that will give you a higher quote unquote guarantee. And we've talked about annuities so often, I almost hate to bring them up again, but it just keeps coming up. But you just have to be so careful. So if you're in that situation, please go to planfirst.com, go to the Talking Money section, or go to our resource section where you can find blogs and a Q&A section, or on the Talking Money section, you'll see by topic, we have one with annuities. So click on that and you can hear several full-length programs that I've done, then that's all I talked about was annuities. So if you really want to learn, you really want to know what's going on with those, start with something like that so that you have a better idea of what kinds of questions to ask, because most people don't ask the right kinds of questions. So, and with this ad that Paul mentioned about in the Sunday paper, promising a high rate of return for a CD, that really is what that is. And you can go there. You can get that CD. And I've told callers before, sometimes they've called to the office and I'll tell them, yeah, go ahead and do that. If you feel like you can resist the temptation to buy the other stuff, cause they will make more in commissions than you will be paid on your interest, because they're going to make 5, 6, 7% that year on the annuity part, not the CD. There again, that's the loss leader, gets you in the door, and then we'll sell you something else. So be careful with that, Paul. And hopefully you're listening today. He sent that question to ask Mike a question. Another couple of questions that came in this week, and we had a listener that came in. She's a widow, 78 years old, and she had been with several brokers over the last several years. And one of the issues that made her want to come in, and she actually attended our free shredding event that we had a couple of weeks ago that went very, very well. So she came and talked to one of our advisors, Eddie Holland, and then she came in and I spoke with her. David and I spoke with her when she came in, Justin and I rather did. And so when we were looking at her situation, and taxes was one of her concerns, because I just paid more than taxes than I usually do last year, and what's going on? So looking at her situation, there were two things that jumped out at us with Justin and myself. One was that she had one stock, and it's one that she actually recommended that they buy for her, had a fairly large gain in it. And I asked her, how much are you giving away each year to your church or other charities? And she said, you know, about $5,000 a year. So, okay, well, this was about a $15,000 position in this stock. So, well, what you need to do is start one of two things. Give away a portion of that stock holding. So give so many shares per year to your church. That way you get the full deduction for the amount of the value of that stock when you made the transfer, and you don't have to pay any capital gains taxes on it, even though in her case it'd probably been a 15%. That's still, and plus state, so it'd been closer to 20% tax. She can avoid all that. She's giving the money anyway. And it's amazing to me how many times and there again, I'll put this in quotes, investment advisor, broker, if they don't do financial planning, these things just don't come up. And when we see things like this, we try to point them out as best we can. So give this way. And then Justin piped in and said, well, let's see if we can use even a donor advised fund. So instead of just giving some of the stock away each year, if it works with her tax situation, let's go ahead and give the full stock position to a donor advised fund. Then with that donor advised fund, it can be the South Carolina Christian Foundation. It can be a Schwab charitable funds. They have that available to the National Christian Foundation. Fidelity, all these places have these charitable funds and these vehicles in which you can do this kind of technique. So you give the whole stock, you get the full deduction for the value of it the year that you make that deduction into the donor advised fund. Still no capital gains because you didn't sell it. It's sold either over time or sold all at once it gets into the donor advised fund. So then you're going to take that money each year and write a check out of the donor advised fund to the church or whatever ministry that you want to give it to. And you still avoid that. Now, there are some limitations on how much you may be able to deduct in a given year. 50% is fairly common for a cash kind of gift, capital gain type property, more like 30%. So, but you can carry it forward. So even if you can't get the full deduction that year, then look at the tax, consult your tax preparer, your CPAs. Is this something that's going to work for me? Because you want to make sure that the tax, you're not doing something that's going to adversely affect you. But typically in her case, it wasn't going to hurt her. She wasn't doing anything anyway. It would still help in the sense that she'd avoid that capital gains. Even if she didn't get the full deduction, she still avoided the capital gains on that property, which is great. And the other thing we spotted in here, and really Justin had mentioned it as well, is that, and we got some great advisors over there. We pick up stuff like this and we try to help each other out. One person thinking one thing. There's so many things to remember, as you can tell just by listening to this show, that there's a lot of things that we talk about financial related. So it was the qualified charitable distribution. She was over 70 and a half. So it could be we do a combination of giving the stock to a donor advised fund, giving some of the shares to the church, and or using her IRA to start making distributions to the qualified charitable distribution. Is only available if you're 70 and a half. not the year you turn 7 and a half. You have the day that you turn 7 and a half. After that, you can actually give money directly from your IRA to a 501c3. It can be your church, it can be a ministry, something, some other charity. But you're going to give the money directly. You just ask the custodian to make a check payable to your church. So in my case, okay, we'll make it to Mitchell Road Presbyterian Church. They'll send me the check. I turn it in just like I do any other contribution I make. I can designate it to the mission fund, to the building fund, to general fund. I can designate it to whatever I want to because it came to me. It didn't go directly to the church, but it's made out to the church. And so then when the advantage to that is it never shows up on your adjusted or gross income. So as opposed to taking your money out of the QCD or of your IRA, putting it on the front of your 1040, it shows up in your adjusted gross income. And then if you itemize, and there are many people that don't itemize, especially over 65, if you itemize, then you take that off your Schedule A, and then it finally gets your taxable income reduced, but your adjusted gross income was higher because of that IRA distribution. Because of that, when you're itemizing your deductions, if you're trying to itemize things like medical expenses or you're itemizing things like your miscellaneous itemized deductions, all those have floors to them, 2%, 7.5%, floor 10% in some cases, that's going to be based on adjusted gross income. So the lower that number is, the greater chance you'll be able to deduct some of those other expenses. Plus, and this is the big one for most people, your Social Security, how much of your Social Security is taxable, not how much is how much the tax is, but how much is included as taxable income is based on the adjusted gross income number. So if I can reduce that adjusted gross income number for you by doing a qualified charitable distribution and having it coming off the an above the line is instead of a below the line deduction, then it's below the above the AGI, then but that number is going to be reduced, and it could affect not only your Social Security, how much is included as taxable income, but also how much your premium is for your Medicare and so forth. And that's generally a higher number, but still it can affect both of those. So those are a couple of ideas that I thought, yeah, these are things that we need to remind people of because this lady listens, you know, fairly regularly. And if you don't listen at the right time, you don't pick these things up. So repeating is usually not a bad idea. All right. I'm past time from a break. When we get back from the break, and I've got some information on stock market and what's happening lately, I'm gonna skip that for now because I want to get to this other topic of who's gonna win the oil wars. Is it the U.S. shale, the OPEC, or is it the consumers? Who's gonna win that? If you've got a comment about that, if you got a question, our phone line is 877-235-9405. So we're back with more of Talking Money in just a couple of minutes. Plan First is excited to sponsor Talking Money now in its 11th year of broadcasting. I believe Plan First is unique in the financial services profession for a couple of reasons. The level of education and experience of the Plan First team makes us specially qualified to provide the level of financial planning I think so many people need. Our goal is to utilize every technique and planning tool that's available to help you pay as little in taxes as possible. I'm sure you like that. Develop an estate plan that not only minimizes estate and gift taxes, but more importantly, I think it maximizes the effective transfer of the estate to the next generation, or maybe you prefer having some of it go to a ministry. We want to help create and implement a retirement income strategy. We also want to construct a portfolio that's going to satisfy your income needs, but we want to do it within that risk level with which you are comfortable. Now, to help avoid the obvious conflicts of interest that so many brokers and other, quote, financial advisors, unquote, who represent their company, not you, Plan First operates as a true fee-only, and we don't want to be confused with a fee-based firm. We have no commissions, no kickbacks, or no fee splits. We never receive any of that. Our only compensation is very transparent, and based on what I've seen, very competitive. It's a fee that's deducted right from your account each quarter. As a true fiduciary, Plan First works for you. If you'd like to know more, or if you think this is something worth checking out, please call Plan First at 1-800-588-7526 to speak with me, Mike Miller, or one of our advisors. Of course, you can always simply check us out at planfirst.com. Now back to Talking Money. And welcome back to Talking Money. This is Mike Miller, your host for today. About another 40 minutes left in the program, coming up on 22 minutes after the hour. The question, who's going to win the oil wars? U.S. shale, OPEC, or consumers? I asked the first question, what's OPEC standing for? You know, when you hear these acronyms all the time, it's like, what is, I don't remember what that means. So the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. So it's a group of countries. And who produces more oil? Russia? OPEC? U.S.? We're going to talk about that in just a minute as well. Have you seen the, have you enjoyed the low prices of gasoline? So I walked or drove past someplace last night. It was $1.85. What prices have you guys seen? So I'd like to share what, see if we can find out where the low prices are. 877-235-9405. Send me a quick text. Say, I just paid $1.85 or I just paid a dollar. I'd love to see who had the lowest price. Maybe we can find out where it is and everybody will go there. Although it is kind of funny, isn't it? How you might drive an extra several miles to pay 2 cents less on gas and you're getting how many gallons? Well, I'm getting 10 gallons. So how much did you save there? Well, I saved 20 cents. Okay, so not a real big deal. So a few cents per gallon doesn't make a huge difference, but it sure feels better, doesn't it? I just got the low price and it just, it feels good. So, and, you know, do you remember not that long ago? We were paying $4 a gallon. It hasn't been that long ago. And we were having all these kinds of congressional hearings and people were saying we need to audit the oil companies because they're gouging the consumer and they're just in it for the money. And what do we need to do with these horrible people? And George Bush and George W. Bush, he's just in their back pocket and look what he's doing to us. Okay. Well, isn't it nice that these same people are coming out now and saying, aren't the oil companies so nice that they could drop the price of gas for us? They're giving us these huge breaks. And of course, they just drove that price up to $4 to make it look good that $1.85 was good. So I remind you every now and then, those of you who've been around a little while, when I was pumping gas in college, it was 25 cents a gallon, 20 cents a gallon. It was a lot less. And now the state gas tax is more than that in most places. So times do change. And of course, we got only about 8 miles a gallon on most of the cars back then too. So you needed it. Except my dad, he had a old 65 VW Bug. That's what I learned, how I learned to drive a stick shift. An old 65 VW Bug. And, you know, he would come in the station probably once every 2 weeks and fill the thing up for about $2. So it took him a long time to use all that gas. But, and bless his heart, he was, he loved the heat, you know, down in Central Florida where this was. He had no air conditioning in the VW Bug and he just drive around that his window down and he just as happy as a clam, as they say. He just like, this is great. My mom couldn't stand it, but my dad liked it. So it's, different strokes for different folks, but we're in a different world now. So we've got a lot of people fighting for your oil, for your gas money. And, we got the U.S. coming right in there. So there's an article recently that in Investors Business Daily was published, written on June 2nd. It was published, I think, June 5th, the Monday issue just a couple of weeks ago, almost 2 weeks ago. And that was the title of the article, Who Will Win the Oil Wars? U.S., Shale, OPEC, or Consumers? So the article is written by Alan Elliott, and he says, the U.S. shale oil revolution has brought consumers worldwide billions of dollars in savings, driving down the price of gasoline, fuel oil, air travel, plastics, and countless other household budget items. It says, now the contest between shale's still emerging revolution, it's been out for a little while, but in the oil business, it's relatively new, and the old school keepers of the global oil price controls has entered a critical new phase. And later on, shale oil producers have learned to cut cost and extract more oil with less gear and smaller work crews. At the prices sought by OPEC, industry experts project a new shale production boom, one large enough to possibly outstrip the rise in global demand growth and push oil back below $50 a barrel, possibly far below. So interesting. So we, if you recall back last year, we were talking about prices going down below $50 a barrel. And now a lot of the OPEC, we'll talk some numbers later about how many U.S. shale in different parts of the U.S. shale industry have filed bankruptcy since that price went down because they just couldn't make money when the prices went down that low. Now the prices have gone, two things, prices have gone back up a little bit. Plus, the U.S. shale producers have, as this article says, have learned to cut cost and extract more oil with less gear. Now, later on, Russia joins OPEC. Well, I don't think that's a formal joining, but this is interesting as part of the article. If there was any question about U.S. shale's impact, it was answered when Russia emerged as a working member of the OPEC, Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Quote, Russia and Saudi Arabia have nothing in common except for oil prices, said Mr. Goddard, director of Pennsylvania State University's Center for Global Business Studies. So they have that in common, oil prices. So Russia's cooperation revived. So Russia and Saudi Arabia have vied for the role of top global oil producer in the past 2 years as U.S. production retreated with the price collapse. Russia overtook Saudi Arabia last year's leading energy vendor to China. But Russia's cooperation revived Saudi-led OPEC's influence over global supply and pricing. In February 2016, so it's a little over a year ago, Russia and a group of OPEC oil ministers tentatively agreed to freeze oil production at the then robust level. In November, Russia signed on to an OPEC production agreement, and the group enacted a three-month cutback beginning in January, just this past January. Is it too strong to say that Russia has become a de facto member of OPEC? No, it isn't, Mr. Goddard says. They're acting more a member of OPEC than most of the OPEC members. All right? So it's about time for our bottom of the hour break. So I pose this other question. Of course, I'd still like your text and say, what kind of gas prices? Who can beat $1.85? Let's put it that way. If somebody out there can beat $1.85, let me know. Send me that text, 877-235-9405. Send me that text. It's free. And we'll see what that's about. And when we get back, so what country is producing more oil? So is it U.S.? Is it the OPEC? I mean, I think it's all understood. It's generally OPEC is the main producer. Russia's right in there as well. I've got some numbers for you and some estimates from the Energy Information Administration. And we're going to look at that when we get back from this break. But if you've got a question or comment about this or about some other financial topic, our toll-free number, if you want to call, 877-235-9405. And, of course, you can text us at that same number. Remember, I want to hear who's beating $1.85 a gallon for regular gas. 877-235-9405. We'll be back with more of Talking Money after this short break. Plan First is excited to sponsor Talking Money, now in its 11th year of broadcasting. I believe Plan First is unique in the financial services profession for a couple of reasons. The level of education and experience of the Plan First team makes us specially qualified to provide the level of financial planning I think so many people need. Our goal is to utilize every technique and planning tool that's available to help you pay as little in taxes as possible. I'm sure you like that. Develop an estate plan that not only minimizes estate and gift taxes, but more importantly, I think it maximizes the effective transfer of the estate to the next generation, or maybe you prefer having some of it go to a ministry. We want to help create and implement a retirement income strategy. We also want to construct a portfolio that's going to satisfy your income needs, but we want to do it within that risk level with which you are comfortable. Now, to help avoid the obvious conflicts of interest that so many brokers and other, quote, financial advisors, unquote, who represent their company, not you, Plan First operates as a true fee-only, and we don't want to be confused with a fee-based firm. We have no commissions, no kickbacks, or no fee splits. We never receive any of that. Our only compensation is very transparent, and based on what I've seen, very competitive. It's a fee that's deducted right from your account each quarter. As a true fiduciary, Plan First works for you. If you'd like to know more, or if you think this is something worth checking out, please call Plan First at 1-800-588-7526 to speak with me, Mike Miller, or one of our advisors. Of course, you can always simply check us out at planfirst.com. Now back to Talking Money. You're listening to Mike Miller. This is Talking Money. We got about 25 minutes left in today's program. We're talking about oil right now. What's the direction? What's the supply? Who's going to win? Of course, consumers always enjoy when gas prices go down. And we always like it when it goes down further, because that's when they start talking about increasing our gas tax, because it's lower. So let's, and we are lower than most other states, especially the surrounding states. So we could go a little bit and still be very competitive with that. But and I think there's all kind of opinions about, should we do that? Is that the way to increase revenue, to make sure our streets are safe and full and repaired and so forth? I think the comment I hear most of the time is that we need to make sure that what we're spending already is being spent efficiently before we decide to add more money to the already inefficient situation. And a buddy of mine said one time, he said, look, you know, the Department of Transportation, it's beyond hope. It's always going to run inefficiently. So, you know, get over it and let's just spend more money to get the thing fixed. Now, we got different kind of opinions, but we're not talking about that today. I did do a quick search to see what the prices were. It looks like the winner is the Circle K from, this is about 12 hours ago. The Circle K on Haywood Road is at $1.82. But everybody else is pretty close. Quick Trip has a couple of $1.84s. And even several of there's another Circle K that's $1.84. And there's $1.85 at the Corner Mart, Lawrence Road. So they're all in that range. And I've heard also the question they ask, well, how come a QT, it's owned by the same company, why is it cost more in one location than it does in another? Well, part of that is going to be competition. What's right around there? You'll notice when you're on a trip, if the intersection you don't want to stop at is the one that just has one gas station. They're pretty much can charge what they want to within reason, because you've got no other choice. Go to the one there's three or four or five, and you're more likely to get at least the best price in that particular area. But one of the things that drives the cost up is the cost of doing business. So is it more expensive to have a gas station that's on the corner of Haywood Road and Pelham, or is it more expensive to have less expensive to have one just on a side road somewhere that's not on a main thoroughfare? And if you don't have that overhead, then you can charge, well, oftentimes they still charge the same thing or just a little less, and they just end up making more money because their expenses are lower. But that's one way to look at it as well. So who's going to win this gas war? So we're talking about how Russia has essentially become a de facto member of OPEC, because they're doing a lot of work together. So what country produces more oil? And by the way, my wife and I just watched this last week, that movie Deep Water Horizon, the one about the Deep Water Horizon, a deep water oil rig that I forget how many years ago it was that it had, I think maybe 2010. That it caught on fire. And I always thought, as our producer David thought, is that going to be a good movie? So we watched it the other night. It ended up being pretty good. Seemed very realistic. Of course, BP does not want you to watch it because they were not held in a very good light, because it showed them cutting corners on some of the safety things in order to get going and get this rig, which was behind schedule. And of course, by the end of the movie, it's way behind schedule because there wasn't one anymore. But it was sad in some ways that people lost their life, but based on a true story, but very interesting movie to show some of the inner workings of an oil rig. I thought it was fascinating just to learn more about how that worked. So I'm sure it was all very accurate because Hollywood put it out. Anyway, so the Energy Information Administration estimates U.S. oil production this year, U.S. oil production this year, will increase 300,000 barrels per day to a total of 9.3 million barrels per day. For 2018, it projects another 700,000 barrels per day of new supply, raising U.S. daily output to around 10 million barrels per day. Saudi Arabia averaged 10.5 million barrels per day in 2016. Russia sucked up 10.96 million barrels per day for the year, topping out at 11.2 million barrels in December. But new shale production techniques make predictions difficult, the article says. So when you think about that, the U.S. is up there with Russia and with OPEC, or just Saudi Arabia, not OPEC, Saudi Arabia. We're right up there with some of the big boys because of our new shale fracking techniques that have advanced in that technology. So they say, the article goes on to say, advances in directional drilling geo-steering, better bits, and more sophisticated downhole communication are allowing drillers to turn out of a vertical well and exploit thinner layers of oil-rich rock. The result, fewer rigs and smaller frack crews can now produce more growth. Mason warns, and this is, try to get these names and make sure we get straight on who's, this is at Hart Energy, Mason at Hart Energy. He warns that this does not necessarily mean the industry has driven down its break-even price per barrel of oil to the sub 45 and sub 40 levels that some producers have claimed. I'm just talking about the technology, said. The economics is a different story. Field surveys on both the services and the exploration and production sides of the business generally come back with prices near $55 per barrel, where things really start to look economically attractive. So in any case, OPEC appears to be targeting oil in the $50 to $55 range, and spending plans are clearly ticking higher among a growing number of independent shale producers. Among the big integrated oil companies, Exxon, Mobil, Chevron, and Royal Dutch Shell have announced $10 billion, that's with a B, $10 billion in combined spending on U.S. shale projects this year. So you think they're thinking things are going to go pretty well? I don't think you put $10 billion into something without thinking you get your money back over some period of time. So that means rising supplies will be rolling onto the market. But unless prices crash, there is scant hope that producers will attempt to limit the supply to the rise in demand. They can't do it all, Mason said. Everybody's self-interest precludes any type of cooperation at all to try to hold supply back. The rising supply of shale oil likely will overpower rising demand, and OPEC's $50 floor will cave. Welcome to the next cycle, he says. The industry has changed since 2014 price plunge. More than 240, I referred to this earlier in the show, more than 240 U.S. exploration, production and services companies have declared bankruptcy after oil prices fell in 2014. The shakeout left the surviving companies better situated to handle another downturn, according to Matt Ferris, a partner with energy bankruptcy specialist Haynes and Boone. So they finish off toward the end of the article from the consumer's point of view, which is what all of us care about. From the consumer's point of view, the lower the better. Every $10, and I hadn't heard this number before, but every $10 decrease in oil prices translates to a 25 cent per gallon cut in gasoline prices, according to Beth Ann Bovino, U.S. chief economist for S&P Global Ratings. Then the final quote in the article, the lower gasoline prices go, the more confident people feel, Bovino said. When things become cheaper, people buy the bigger car. Or instead of driving to the local beach, they drive all the way down to Florida. And I always think that's kind of interesting. It doesn't surprise me so much that people might drive further, go to Florida or do something more. Or even that's only the tip of the iceberg. When people save, you know, several hundred, depending on how much you drive, if you're saving several hundred dollars a month or several thousand dollars a year because the prices are lower than they were, especially at $4 a gallon, that's going to give you more money, more discretionary spending money. But what I don't understand is why when gasoline prices go down, people buy the bigger car or the one that has worse gas mileage. It's like, do you think gas prices are always going to stay that low? And maybe they don't stay that low. They'll stay that low because of supply and demand, but not necessarily because of the tax situation. If they increase the gas tax, guess what? Well, you're going to pay more per gallon. But as I've said before, I think this was probably a year ago. I had to go back and look. But I said that on this show that I felt like with the way the fracking has come such a long way in development and technology has developed so strongly in that area that we were able to increase the supply, that increase in supply, every time the price goes down, that may drop off. Then as the price goes up, the fracking companies are really good about slowing down production and then getting back in there very quickly and getting in production back up so that we're always going to have that supply out there that's going to put a damper on the prices and keep them lower, I think, than for some as far as we can see out, it's going to be for some time. So I think you'll be okay buying that car that maybe has a little less gas mileage. You'll still spend more money, of course, but I think for a while, you're still going to see some lower gas prices for quite some time. So just have a couple more comments that some other people made about the oil shale, that most of them were agreement. But this one said, this was from the Wall Street Journal, that said oil prices forecast lowered on crude glut worries despite OPEC-led cuts. So this one really was saying a poll of 14 investment banks surveyed by the Wall Street Journal in late May predicted that the benchmark Brent crude oil will average $56 a barrel this year, down $1 from the April survey. Banks in the survey have also downgraded their expectations for oil prices in the next few years, predicting Brent crude will average $59 a barrel. So that's in direct opposition to what these others have said. U.S. drillers have also been ramping up their production, which we talked about earlier, to take advantage of price gains. The number of active oil rigs in the U.S. rose for 19th straight week last week to its highest in more than 2 years, according to oil services firm Baker Hughes. So they're certainly coming back as prices go up a little bit, and they've gone back down. I think they're in the mid-40s now. But it's interesting how it changes things. In North Dakota, last comment about this before the break, North Dakota's the Bakken drilling, that's been interesting to see how much activity's gone up there in these small towns, relatively small towns in North Dakota, how they just boom. This article from Watford City, North Dakota, radio stations here are running ads from oil field companies seeking drivers and mechanics. A store is serving up, and get a load of this. I thought this had to be interesting. A store is serving up an alligator and crawfish lunch to welcome workers from the Gulf Coast. Now, is that appetizing or what? Doesn't that make you want to just run up to North Dakota and get you a job up there so you can get some alligator and crawfish lunch? Well, I've never had that, so I guess I can't say whether or not it's good or bad, but it sure doesn't sound all that good. So the revival after nearly 3 year bust is welcomed by the local industry officials, but they're concerned about it being too much too soon. Some are concerned that too much too soon could send oil prices plunging once again. And later on, this article by Aaron Aylworth, also in the Wall Street Journal, despite technological improvements and cost cutting, only some producers can afford to drill in the Bakken at today's oil prices. And they talk about the break even is at $40 a barrel there. So that's, as you hear prices of the oil per barrel, just keep those kind of in mind. And this is usually the sweet crude that we're talking about, $40 a barrel, $50 a barrel. So the peak was 218 rigs 5 years ago, but North Dakota's rig count has rebounded from a low of 27 back up to 51. So they're still way down from where they were before. But it's a little like, I'd have a little Greenville parallel, because the residents are happy there about the amenities, because Sutton Oil got them newly paved roads, fancy recreation center, and all this stuff, but they really don't want to see the boom return in full force. A little like upstate, where, you know, we've got a good thing going on here. We love our area, but we keep getting quoted. The marketing people in Greenville development, they do such a good job that we're getting quoted in these national magazines as one of the top 10 places to live. And you know what? When they do that, more people come. And when more people come, it can mess up what we've got here. So it'd be nice if they all kept quiet about us so we can just kind of enjoy our thing. We like where we are now, but I'm sure we'll handle the growth like many other places, hopefully better than many other places have done for a long time. All right, so we got last break we're going to come up with here for a couple minutes. If you got one last quick comment, 877-235-9405 is the phone line. Text line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Plan First is excited to sponsor Talking Money, now in its 11th year of broadcasting. I believe Plan First is unique in the financial services profession for a couple of reasons. The level of education and experience of the Plan First team makes us specially qualified to provide the level of financial planning I think so many people need. Our goal is to utilize every technique and planning tool that's available to help you pay as little in taxes as possible. I'm sure you like that. Develop an estate plan that not only minimizes estate and gift taxes, but more importantly, I think it maximizes the effective transfer of the estate to the next generation, or maybe you prefer having some of it go to a ministry. We want to help create and implement a retirement income strategy. We also want to construct a portfolio that's going to satisfy your income needs, but we want to do it within that risk level with which you are comfortable. Now, to help avoid the obvious conflicts of interest that so many brokers and other, quote, financial advisors, unquote, who represent their company, not you, Plan First operates as a true fee only, and we don't want to be confused with a fee-based firm. We have no commissions, no kickbacks, or no fee splits. We never receive any of that. Our only compensation is very transparent, and based on what I've seen, very competitive. It's a fee that's deducted right from your account each quarter. As a true fiduciary, Plan First works for you. If you'd like to know more, or if you think this is something worth checking out, please call Plan First at 1-800-588-7526 to speak with me, Mike Miller, or one of our advisors. Of course, you can always simply check us out at planfirst.com. Now back to Talking Money. Now, welcome back to Talking Money. We've got about 7 minutes left in the show today and have a caller on the line. Probably don't have time for another caller, so we'll go ahead and switch right to John, who's calling us from Anderson. Good morning, John, and welcome to Talking Money.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Good.
Stay inside and keep cool. Stay inside and keep cool.
What are you going to do when it warms up?
That's right. So what's your question today?
Well, it's not really a question. Okay. I was in the car and you were chatting about annuities.
Oh, okay.
And the one thing about annuities, and I was just going to give a short synopsis of my experience with annuities.
Good.
4 or 5 years ago when I was getting ready to retire, for whatever reason, I thought annuities. I said, hey, I'm going to get me an annuity.
Okay.
So after talking to numerous brokers, the one thing I did find out after doing my own research is there is a huge commission that's paid on annuities up front.
Yeah. Well,
that's number one.
Glad you found that out ahead of time.
Number one. They run anywhere from 6 to 10% depending on the company.
Okay.
And as you remember, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, there was, you know, you could get 4% in a savings or 5% or 3%. But the one thing is that as the rates dropped, so was the monthly payments on the annuities. So you never really saw any kind of return because you're getting charged 7% up front, which, depending on the size of your annuity, can be sizable. And it takes 7 years to break even. So if you decide to come out of that annuity, whether it be now, 8 months from now, or 8 years from now, you're taking a pretty big hit. So it was just under luck that I was able to get on the internet, looked up at a bunch of companies, talked to different brokers, and brokers will always give you that big smile and say, oh, it's the greatest thing in the world. Well, if their annuity was losing $35,000 up front and or more, and you're receiving less than 1% rate, you wouldn't be too excited. But I just thought I'd just drop that off because there's so many great investments and annuities aren't part of it.
So that was 5 years ago you retired, John?
Yes.
5 years ago. So you ended up not buying the annuity? Is that, did I hear that correctly?
I never bought the annuity. Okay. And I did research on other investments, mutual funds, and so on and so forth. Okay. And it's worked out very, very well for me.
Well, good for you. So I guess you weren't listening to Talking Money 5 years ago.
no, I wasn't.
Okay, well, I'll just give that plug because we've talked about annuities many times. So if you run across anybody that just wants more than just what John's experience was, as I said earlier in the show, you can always go to planfirst.com, go to the Talking Money section, and we've got several hour-long shows, well, 47 minutes shows that's all we talked about was annuities, given the pros and cons and so forth. Mostly, of course, we're dealing with the cons because that's what most people get sold on some rates of return, and they don't realize it's more of a monopoly money than it is real money. So I appreciate your comment, John.
Oh, of course. And I do have a neighbor that did buy an annuity, and he bought it from Wells Fargo.
Okay.
So they're, you know, they have all these different areas that you can get trapped into.
Yeah, they do. Okay, thanks for the call,
John.
All
right, buddy, you have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Thanks for calling. Yeah, there's a couple minutes left in the show, but I on following up on John's call, I had a call last week, early in the week, from a gentleman down in Pensacola, Florida, who's friends with a client of mine, who this client actually lives out in Mexico, and Texas, near Mexico. And they were missionaries, or had some missionary contacts out there. And he wanted me to talk to him about investing some of their money. Well, he told me he had a little over half of it was in an annuity he'd purchased some years ago. And so I think probably 12, 13 years ago. So he said his explanation of it was currently paying 4.3%, but it had a minimum guarantee of 3. So I said, okay, that sounds interesting. Some of the older annuities did have those kind of guarantees. So can you send me some information on it so I can look at it and see exactly what it is? So he sent the information to me, got it yesterday, Thursday, I think. And so when I got it in, I looked at this information, and it's an equity indexed annuity, and it has two parts of it. So it does have a fixed part that does have a 3% guarantee, but it looks like an either or thing. So you're either in the one that's the linked to the indexes, which has a cap of 4.5%. And so they show the calculation where, because his policy year happens to go from like March to March. So when you look at an annual return from March to March, the S&P was up like 20 some percent. So, but because of, and it's a 70% participation rate. So you think, great, I get 70% of that. Well, no, it also has a 4.5% cap. So, so in this case, I guess it's a 4.3% cap because that's what he was paying. So he had a 4.3% cap. But it renegotiated, so for the next year, the cap is going to be 4%. So no matter what the market does, he was going to get that. And the minimum on that particular part was 0%, not 3%. So what he didn't understand was that he was in the part that didn't have the 3% guarantee. It just happened to be one that paid 4%. So I calculated from the beginning of it what kind of return he'd actually made in the contract for that 14 years, whatever it's been. And it was about 2.3%. is what he's made over that length of time. So he didn't lose money, and I don't know what the surrender charges is. I didn't get that part of it, but you just have to be so careful with the kinds of information you get in to make sure you know what you're getting. And please, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to get not just comments from people like John, but we want the questions. You're in the middle of something. Use us, use me, use our firm as a resource to make sure you make the right decisions. Even if you're not going to do business with us, that's fine. We want to make sure you make the right decision. Well, thanks for listening to Talking Money today. We hope you have a great weekend. And once again, happy Father's Day. Talk to you next week.